everyone, and welcome to Indie Business Radio for Monday, October 1st, 2007. I'm your host, Donna Maria, and you have arrived at the one place where we empower you to enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way. Today's show is sponsored by Sunrose Aromatics, 100% pure and natural essential oils, including rare and exotic finds like chocolate peppermint, real vanilla, and butter oil. Who knew you could get fragrant oils from these plants and ingredients? Sunrose, that's who. Learn more at sunrosearomatics.com. Well, today is the first day of October, and it's Breast Cancer Awareness Month, of course, and you can join me and other indies for the cure to fight breast cancer at my blog at indiebusinessblog.com. Log on and join me this month to help eradicate breast cancer forever. Well, you all know how important it is to market yourselves, and you also know how significant I think a book can contribute to those marketing efforts. As an author myself, I've enjoyed being able to promote my business using books and other written materials, and we've got some experts here today who are going to give us some tips on how to use a book to market our businesses and just generally how to market a book in the first place. Lillian and Dave Bromette are authors, poets, photographers, and book reviewers. Their work has appeared in a variety of publications around the globe. They have published two books in addition to the one that we're going to be talking about today, which is called Purple Snowflake Marketing. They've also been honored with an award for the outstanding use of various media in ongoing outreach work to reduce waste in our environment. They are a husband and wife team joining us from Canada this afternoon. Welcome to the show, Lillian and Dave.
Well, thank you, Donna Maria. It's just fantastic to be here with you.
Hi, Donna. How are you?
I'm good, both of you. Now, I got to ask you just at the outset, because it's so interesting to me that you guys, as a husband and wife, have decided to work together. I'm going to start by asking Lillian to give me a short summary of what it is like to work with the person that you also live with.
Well, I think that, number one, a person really has to think about the common courtesy factor when you're working with another individual, making sure that you're taking their needs and their time schedule into your own consideration and into your own expectations of what that person should be able to contribute. So we try to give each other space and also to focus on using each other's strengths. Dave is an excellent proofreader. He's very good at editing and forming sentences in a very clear and concise and friendly manner. And so his skills are certainly an asset in everything that we have published. He's also a photographer. I'm really skilled in regards to researching and networking and marketing and organization and these kinds of skills. So we sort of split off, and then we meet in the middle when it comes to creating the books and marketing the books as well. Again, Dave is very good with dealing with people face-to-face and hosting events. Because of his experience as a drum teacher, he does drum workshops, and because of that experience, he's very good with dealing with groups of people. When we do presentations in schools and things like that, he's the main presenter, and I'm more of the assistant, making sure that we're following the outline that we have and handing him the displays as they come up and that kind of thing. So it works really well, I think, if you realize each other's strengths and work with that.
It sounds like, of course, you guys have been very effective together, and your business seems to be going gangbusters. Tell me, Dave, how did this whole thing get started with you and Lillian working together? Were you doing something else in a more traditional sense beforehand?
I have to say it started about 10 years ago. We've been together for about 17 years, a little over 17 years now. About 10 years ago, we decided to go serious with our writing. We'd both been writing for most of our life, whether it's poetry, short stories. We both did a bit of correspondence with a writing school and learned the basics of being a writer and how to approach the publishers when you have something written and how to properly present yourself. And starting from that point, we took it seriously and started doing a lot of articles in newsletters, magazine articles, sort of what we call freelance writing. And from that, that developed into our idea for our first book, Trash Talk, which was based on a lot of those first freelance projects. So, and we just naturally started working together really, really well. Working well together is very important because we share a computer, of course. It's kind of tough that way, but we really work on each other's strengths, and we've been doing that for 10 years now and really developed it into quite a nice little teamwork thing we have here.
And what have you noticed, Dave, about the publishing industry in the past 10 years? Have there been any significant changes that can help authors who are either self-publishing books or work with small publishing houses?
Well, I think in the last 10 years, a couple of important things have happened. Mainly the technologies that we have as writers now. We have computers and spell checkers and grammar checkers and instant access to communications between publishers with emails that take anywhere from a few minutes to maybe a few days to get an answer. In the old days, we used to wait for weeks and months sometimes for an answer back from a publisher on an article. So that article sits waiting, not knowing whether it's been accepted or not. So nowadays, with the technology of emails, it's pretty much instant, and most publishers and writing people are also working on the weekends, nighttime weekends, so you can get an answer on a weekend where normally you have to wait weeks and business hours only in the old traditional sense of snail mail. So another important thing is to consider as a writer is that publishers don't necessarily have editors that edit for the writer. So you have to give pretty much the product that the publisher is expecting in its final form acceptable to them. They don't want to have to do a lot of work to fine craft your work and saying, well, you know, we have to rewrite this and redo this piece to fit our format. You pretty much have to do your homework and your background checking on that publication, that magazine that you're writing for, before you even write for them and see what you're going to submit to them. Make sure you write along the same vision that they have for their publication. So very
Is it harder these days, Dave, to have a book published because things have changed so much than it was, say, 10 years ago?
Sorry, what was that? I didn't hear the first part of the question.
Is it more difficult today than it was 10 years ago to get a book published? And I want to focus for a moment not on self-publishing, but on having a traditional publishing house publish your book.
Actually, I think it's easier now to get published, although the competition is higher because a lot of people have computers and they are able now to, with Word programs and other programs on the computer, they're more easily able to put a book together. Even though the competition might have gone up as an author in regards to getting a publisher's attention, there are more publishers and there are also a variety of genres of publishers. Some publishers will focus on particular genres in regards to, they might only focus on mystery books or only nonfiction books, or it might be a general publisher that publishes all kinds of things. So we can, you know, look for the publisher that is just right for us. You know, is this a publisher that focuses on environmental books? Well, they might be more interested in a book that we have that has an environmental theme. So we can get a more fine focus publisher in that regard. There's also new technologies in regards to print on demand and e-books. As with any industry, when you get new technologies happening, there can be some resistance in the marketplace, in the industry, especially when things are first being fine-tuned. But now, in these days, print on demand and e-books are becoming very popular choices for authors to choose, and they offer a lot of benefits as well. You know, for instance, print-on-demand basically means if the publisher gets an order from a particular wholesaler, let's just say Amazon says, I want two copies of Trash Talk. Well, then the print-on-demand publisher will go and they'll print those two copies, and they'll send those two copies to that person that ordered that book. Traditionally, what they would do is they would print out thousands and thousands, sometimes tens of thousands of copies. They have to have warehouse costs and warehousing buildings, and then there's, you know, costs involved with loss of product due to improper storage or perhaps issues that happened in the warehouse, like flooding or fire. Any of these kinds of things can happen and destroy that publication. And it's also a very environmental choice to choose print-on-demand and e-books because it doesn't destroy as many trees. Again, traditional publishers in the past would print out, again, tens of thousands of books. Well, that's a lot of trees sitting there that may never, ever get read. And so it's important that we take these kinds of things into consideration when we're shopping nowadays to consider what effect we're having on resources.
It's, you know, if it's true then that there is at least one book in everyone, and I've heard that said many times before, it sounds like the biggest challenge before the book actually comes out is actually having the discipline to sit down and put pen to paper.
That's correct, yeah. Yeah, that's the biggest discipline we have to do is get it down and of course, present it in a rational way that it's going to be acceptable to the market you're directing it at.
Because I love what you said, Lillian, about how you can match the idea that you have for a book with a publisher who's already predisposed to express an interest in it.
That's correct. And with the Internet nowadays, with Google searches and somewhat, say I've written an article on snowshoeing, for instance, I can now do a search for any publication out there that is possibly looking for an article on snowshoeing. There's websites and hubs now that you can look for that and apply what you have ready to go and find that market.
That's right. It doesn't matter whether you're a freelance writer, a poet, someone who strictly focuses on publishing books or booklets, whatever your genre is, the key is to research your market and make sure that you look at their guidelines. Look at their guidelines and see what they're looking for and make sure that you're meeting those standards to the letter before you even consider sending your query letter out to that market.
Now, Lillian, how did you and Dave's idea for Purple Snowflake Marketing come about?
Okay, well, originally, of course, it was our own marketing plan. It's actually based on research that we've done with well over 3 years of research, hundreds of books and magazines and articles that we've researched just for our own promotion needs. We've also discussed with numerous authors over the years, things that they've been doing, and our business marketing courses that we've taken to run our own home-based businesses as well. All of this information is compiled into this ebook, and basically, as I said earlier, it started out as our own marketing plan. And I found that I was giving out this information regularly on writers' forums. You know, as writers, we tend to share generously between each other and trying to help each other along. And so on these forums, I was just, you know, sharing information with others. And eventually, I became known as a marketing guru. And I was also called the Pink Bunny because our marketing just keeps on going and going and going. And these kinds of terms were happening for us. And I decided that Dave and I should really consider putting this ebook together in such a way that that these authors that are working on a frugal budget and with limited skills, a lot of them haven't been exposed to what is involved with publishing a book, and this is what we've put together in this ebook for them.
I think the title "Purple Snowflake Marketing" is important to make a note of what that means. Purple snowflake marketing is how to make your book or your product stand out in a snowstorm of other products, because you can picture a purple snowflake in a field of snow, it would stand out. Most books are going to have a hard time standing out with all the books that are now available. What is it per year that is published, Lillian? 3 million or something?
Oh, yeah. In the States alone, there's over 170,000 books that are published annually.
Yeah.
So, you know, your book has to stand out among those books that are published every year, but also the ones that were published before.
So our book basically teaches you how to stand out and make your book a little more special than the other books around you in your genre even.
I love that. That's a good word picture, the purple snowflake. I like that title. So, Dave, when you set out to write a book and you decide to choose the marketing channels that you use, are the marketing channels generally different depending on the type of book you want to write, or are there some broad categories that everybody can use no matter what kind of book they have?
I think it's pretty much specialized to your book, Donna Marie. Most books have a certain slant on them, a certain topic like, for instance, if we're writing about purple snowflake marketing in a book, we have to sort of go for that audience that needs this book. So we have to consider what the audience is looking for, how they want it presented. As writers ourselves, we can look at that and understand that easily. So, of course, you usually write about what you know well. You're not going to write about something you don't really know much about. So knowing a lot about what we're talking about, we can slant this towards ourselves and say, yeah, this is what we would like as a writer. And we see what we've found before in the market that's not working for people. So we can sort of say, yeah, this has worked, this doesn't work. Take ideas that we've seen and morph it into our own thing. So definitely I think each book has its own individual marketing plan.
Absolutely. There are general things that most book authors will do to promote their book. I mean, we're all going to go out and we're going to try to get the libraries to buy our books. We're all going to contact the bookstores and say, hey, here's another book that's just come out. But in order to stand out among a crowd, as you know, like a purple snowflake, you need to do something different. And in order to do that, you need to define exactly who your audience is, as Dave mentioned. You need to define exactly what benefits they're going to get out of your book. Also, you need to define what are the possible obstacles in the market and how are you going to overcome those. Those are all keys before you even develop your marketing plan. These are the key steps that will help you develop a very effective marketing plan.
And Lillian, what are some of the key online marketing tools and tasks that are available to people who have a book that they really want to market mainly online?
Okay, well, the basic initial things that people need to do online would be, of course, getting their signatures happening on their emails and their communications. This is a little automatic tool that you can sign up on, get designed on your emails and your outgoing correspondence that says your name and your website addresses and your basic information, such as, you know, your book is due out on such and such a date, or it's available here now, or these kinds of things. You can put in your signature. You can, of course, promote your other marketing activities, whether it be your blog or your newsletter. These kinds of things are very important to have in your signature. The second thing that people should do right away when they're promoting their book, even if it's you only have one page or a paragraph worth of information, get a website happening. You need to have something that you can refer people to, and you also need a place that you can go to and maintain on a regular basis that you can update new information. That's the first thing I think people need to do when it comes to internet marketing.
Do you recommend, Lillian, reserving a website domain that exactly matches the title of the book?
There's two worlds of thought on that. Some authors feel that it is vital to have a website per book, such as, you know, I don't know, purplesnowflakemarketing.com. However, for our particular situation and for many other authors, a general website for themselves works well. It doesn't have to be one that you've purchased with your own domain name. You can use a variety of the free websites that are out there available for people. Our website comes with our internet access. We get a free website with that, and we've been using that very effectively since the beginning of our writing career, and people love going there. We have I don't think we have any limitations at all. We have podcasts on there. We have hundreds of links and articles and all kinds of images, and it doesn't seem to have any limitation for us at all. I think it's been a very effective tool.
If anything, Donna Marie, it's possibly a benefit. The way we look at it in our book is to use any kind of media you have in multi ways. For instance, a business card, you'd print possibly two sides to use both sides of. By having someone come to your multi-book website, they see the book that they're after, and then they also see, oh, here's the other books available by that same author. So that kind of tool is very important to make full use of media in advertising your other books and your other projects, too. So I think it's actually a good thing to combine all onto one.
Absolutely, and you're also taking advantage of any free and frugal marketing path that you can take. at that time, because with most authors, the marketing budget goes very quickly between, you know, purchasing your review copies that you're sending out, and if you choose to do advertising, well, it's really going to go very fast. And so, you know, your displays and your posters and all of these kinds of things cost money. So it's all about where you want to spend that money. Personally, we put our money towards those kinds of things rather than towards getting our personal domain name. We felt it wasn't necessary.
Mm-hmm. And are there key differences between books that are, for example, in the fiction genre and the books that are in the nonfiction genre? I know there's lots more categories. And by the way, the Purple Snowflake marketing book does an incredible job of listing those categories. But the two broadest ones kind of occur to me is, you know, you either have fiction or you have nonfiction. And are there different marketing techniques that generally apply to one or the other, or even both in some instances?
Ooh, that's a really good question. I think that they're very different genres, but most people will read both nonfiction and fiction. They'll want the fiction to take them away, but they want the nonfiction because they want to learn something. So I think with either market, you want to highlight what the benefit is.
Okay, so again, the all-important what's in it for me question has to be answered, huh?
That's right.
And so let's focus for a moment on nonfiction books. I think a lot of indies out there have learned how to do something really well, and that's, in fact, how they've started their business. And oftentimes I talk with people who say, you know, I'd like to help other people learn how to do this. It may be manufacturing something in particular. It may be some sort of skill or art or craft that they have learned, and they want to be able to teach other people, empower other people to do what they've learned how to do. What are some of the first things that they can do? One of the things you said you did was started contributing your expertise in written form in discussion groups forums where it was appropriate. Is that a good place to kind of kick things off if you have never done anything like this before?
Well, yeah, we felt that with our first book, Trash Talk, it was perfect timing to have the topic of how to recycle and do a better job of managing your own waste output. 5 or 6 years ago, it was just a hot topic, and this book came out right at the time we were noticing that a lot of people were kind of shy of doing the recycling thing. We saw that once the recycling came to the curb, people were a lot more acceptable of it, and it was a little less work. They could do it. It wasn't a thing to be ashamed of or have false pride about, especially when it comes to reusing something. Some people are a little bit ashamed of going to a secondhand store and buying secondhand clothing. Nowadays, it's all the rage. Kids are just eating it up like it's more important than new clothes to have some fashionable older clothes. So,
right.
Yeah, basically, when you find a niche that's got an opening and you have some knowledge about it, the pathway is open for you. If you present it in a proper way, like you know, say, for instance, you learned about it in a certain way, and there's a certain way you have to do things in a basic, rudimentary sense to learn it, start by that with your writing. How would you, as a person first learning that about recycling, say, need to go about learning in a proper way and use that as your writing outline?
That's right, but you're very right there, Donna Marie. The forums, getting involved with forums and other communities that focus on the genre that you're working on at that time is definitely a key to getting into the audience. And another key, too, is writing articles or reviewing books that are within the genre that you're working in, because you're exposing yourself through your byline, your promotional byline, you're exposing yourself and your expertise to that particular audience. And that's the audience that you're trying to promote to. So this is a great underground way of spreading of getting name recognition.
Lillian, what kind of time commitment is involved in this? I would imagine that after someone's written a book, you know, your brain might be a little bit fried, and it's such a huge accomplishment to be done. And then you turn your attention to going full bore on the marketing, but oftentimes you also have to keep an existing business going. What are some tips that you can offer to someone to kind of help them maneuver within the 24 hours that we all have in a day to keep an existing income stream coming in as well as promote a book, which I guess can also increase the income stream that's coming in.
I think the key is to have, two skills. First, you have to have time management skills. You have to be able to decide where in your day can you dedicate a certain number of hours or a certain amount of time. If it's only half an hour that you have from Monday to Friday every day, well, that's all you have to work with. Maybe Saturday and Sunday you can increase that to 4 or 6 hours over the weekend to, increase that. What you need to do is dedicate a time. If you can, for people on tight schedules or who are working, say, a set amount of hours in a job, you know, people who don't have to have their schedules move around too much, they can pick a certain length of time, such as between 4 and 6 o'clock in the evening. Nobody talk to me. Everybody be quiet. Everybody stay out of the office. And we're turning off the phone because I'm busy. I'm working. And that's what you have to do. You have to make sure that your family is involved. Your friends also have to be involved and understand that, you know, whatever your marketing time is or your writing time is, whatever you've given yourself for your writing career, they have to allow you that time. They can't come and knocking because you're home and want to come visit you. They've got to be able to give you that time, and you have to have the self-discipline to say, no, I can't talk to you right now. No, I can't take care of your dry cleaning or whatever it is that's going on in the family life. You have to be able to give that to yourself in order to get ahead. And again, I think the self-discipline is the second key. You have to be able to force yourself to stick to that marketing, those hours that you've decided to market. For myself, I write full-time. I'm at home in my office working full-time. So part of my day is writing, part of my day is marketing, part of my day is dealing with the record keeping. That's making sure that I have all the information and knowing who I'm going to have to contact and when, and all of that kind of stuff has to be organized. And so I try to segment my day so that I can handle all of those things at once. I personally, I think Dave and I spend anywhere between 4 to 6 hours on a daily basis simply marketing our work.
And how did you guys decide on an ebook for the Purple Snowflake marketing book as opposed to other forms of books that you had to choose from, Dave?
Actually, we thought that was a rational way to go because an ebook being online, basically on your computer, we have a lot of links in the back appendices. There's about 6 or 7 appendices full of links and resources.
No, there's 21
appendices. They're full of links and instant hyperlinks that you can just click on. So when you're on your computer online, you just click on this link, say, for a contact in libraries in Arkansas, for instance. And it's that fast. It's like being on the Internet. So rather than having to go to a book and open your book and type in a link to find that particular resource, it's much faster.
What I think is another great resource in the back of your book is a summary of holidays that fall in different months of the year.
Well, that's part of Purple Snowflake marketing. It's another key is how are you going to stand out? How are you going to get media exposure? And in order to do that, you have to tie into events and get people's attention. So, for instance, this month, as you mentioned earlier, is breast cancer or cancer awareness month. Is that right? Or breast cancer awareness month. And so if your book has a character who has experience with cancer, even, and it's a fiction book, you can use that one little aspect, that one character, you can use that this month in your promotion effort.
And that certainly is a good list to have no matter what you're promoting, isn't it?
Well, absolutely. I use it all the time. I'm constantly referring to that holiday list myself, that holiday and event list, pretty much on a every other day basis. I'm going back to that chapter and using it myself. I use it for our radio show as well when I'm dealing about certain subjects. If it's such as Canadian Rivers Day, I might talk about, you know, how we can all clean up a river near us and participate on an individual level and these kinds of things. So it's very effective to reach the market and stand out.
And you guys do a lot of real hands-on, proactive outreach to market your books and your other, your magazine articles and things. What would you say are the top 2 or 3 outreach methods that have worked best for you?
We found for our book Trash Talk, actually, a few of the outreach projects we've done has been to clean up the trails and little park areas around our town. And we find that not only gained some excitement about the book and the topic of taking some responsibility for our world and our environment, but it also just got people thinking, I should be out there cleaning up, just getting them not on a guilt trip, but just feeling better about where they hike and walk and taking some responsibility for the garbage they walk by every day rather than, pissing and complaining about it. Pick it up and do something, because when you walk by it complaining, it's really no worse than the person who dropped it there.
So. Mm-hmm. And when you've done outreach, let's say for an ebook, have you found that a community has developed around it? I mean, do you have like a blog or any other kind of community type things that surround any of your books, online community type things?
Sure, yeah. We have two blogs. There's one at our website at myspace.com/Canadian authors. They can go there and they can look at our blog. I maintain that probably at least once a week, if not several times a week. There's also a blog at our radio show, which is www.blogtalkradio.com/conscious discussions. And we maintain those two blogs as well. Just recently, though, this last year or so, we've been doing the blog thing. Before that, we were doing more other activities such as writing articles, book reviews, internet networking, marketing to various publications, and these kinds of things was where our focus was before. But now we've taken on doing blogs. I know a lot of authors start out with a blog, or they start out with a newsletter, and I guess that's all right if you've already built a name recognition and an audience, a loyal audience that keeps on coming back to your website. But at first, I think you really need to build that name recognition and get some expertise, your knowledge and your expertise out there, get some people interested in coming to your website, and then start providing them with materials like that. For us, it's been very effective.
You mentioned the term building a community, Donna Marie. Lillian actually had quite a community built before the book was even released. She's active on a lot of forums where she talks with other writers. And being herself so generous with her advice, she'd got a lot of interest from these writers before the book was even released and actually finished. And people were saying, well, when's it out? I'm interested. When can I get the book? So very important thing to note is to build your community before the book is even out. Build some excitement. Get some people interested before the pre-release date. So it's never too soon.
Actually, Dave brings up a really good point there. Your marketing plan should begin 3 to 6 months prior to the release date. A lot of people wait until their book is actually going to be released, or a few months they realize, oh, it's going to be released in a couple of months. I guess I should start working on a marketing plan. You're a little bit late. You need to work sooner than that. For instance, with our first book, Trash Talk, because it deals with environmental waste reduction, recycling, reuse, these kinds of things, those are the markets that I started networking with at first, and I started a good 6 months prior to the release of the book. I said, here's this book that's coming out. It's supporting what you guys are doing. I'd like to list you in the resources or whatever kind of networking thing I was working with them about. Maybe they had a newsletter, and I wanted to see if I could get an article based on the book published there or these kinds of things. And that networking really was very effective. I had responses from that initial networking up to a year and a half, sometimes 2 years, after the first initial contact with that person that was still getting networking possibilities and opportunities out of these organizations. And it's very important that we start early, very early.
That's one thing we have to realize is you see those nice reviews that people have on their book covers on the inside of the back. Someone has already reviewed their book before the release, obviously. So that's how you get these pre-release reviews to be included on your actual book, is to have somebody out there reading an author's copy, and these people can then supply a review for the book, which looks really good. It's impressive to have that review on your book or inside the jacket.
And how do you suggest people track all of this information? I mean, I'm hearing you offer so many fabulous tips, and I know there's even more in your Purple Snowflake marketing book, But I just wonder what sorts of tools you use and what you recommend other people use to track all this, because it's not just like tracking contacts for people who may be interested in buying whatever product it is you're selling, because that you may have one product and you sell it to different people and you track your contacts with them. But with a book, it sounds like, I mean, you've got your discussion groups, you've got your radio shows, you've got your magazines, you've got your online blogs and people who might be interested in using some of your content to help you promote the book, as you also help them, you know, give information to their readers and viewers. How do you suggest people track all this? It seems like a full-time job just to track it.
It can be quite overwhelming, actually. Initially, when I first started doing record keeping, I was using the Excel program. I still am, but I know there's other record keeping programs that people can use. But I personally use the Excel program, and I found at first I was keeping track of every single person that I contacted, whether I had gotten a response for them or not. Eventually, I decided that this was, you know, getting into the thousands, lists of thousands, and I really couldn't keep this kind of information. And so I kept it down to simply the people who were responding to my queries. A query, for those of you who don't know what that is, it's basically your letter of introduction and your explanation of why you're contacting them. You know, I'm an author, Lillian Brummett. I'm contacting you about my book, Trash Talk. I think that it would fit well with your audience because blah, this is what I'd like to do with you, this kind of thing. That's a query. So what I found was just by keeping track of the people that were responding to that query. So for Excel, what I would do is I would use color codes so that at a glance I could see, you know, who needs a follow-up letter. You know, someone might tell me, okay, well, yes, I'm interested in having your article in our newsletter, but I can't think about doing that until next spring. So that means I have to follow up next spring. So I'll use a color code that says, okay, this one needs a follow-up for me, that's blue. You can see who has been a success or a failure by your color codes as well, such as I'll block out the whole line of that person, their contact information, their name, and all of the notes that I have on them. I'll block that whole thing, say, as green, because they've said to me, no, actually, I've decided not to work with you because of this or that reason, and that way I know at a glance that I don't have to follow up on them, but I have contacted them, and we have had interactions, so that way hopefully I don't double them. I don't hit them up again accidentally. Also, I keep track of ones that have been a completed project, such as a Whole Life Living Journal, for instance, has done a number of articles of ours. They're putting out another one in November, and they're marked as purple because I don't have to deal with them anymore. They're done. So every one, I'll have a different code for that person. It doesn't matter. I don't have color codes for the source of that market, such as whether it's a publication, a radio program, a journalist, a reviewer. I only have color codes for what I need to do, such as do I need to follow them up? Is it a completed project? Am I published there? Those kinds of things. And I can look at a glance and see exactly where I'm at.
Wow. I'm listening to you, and I'm thinking you could write a whole book just on that.
Yeah.
I certainly could, yes. And when it comes to tracking the actual book sales on, like, for instance, Amazon has a tracking method that I think they list your book amongst 3 million others. And so you have a number of between 1 and 3 million as to where your book is at that particular day. So you can go crazy keeping track of that, or you can just wait for your royalty check at the end of your 6 month or your quarterly period and do that way, because you can really spend a lot of time tracking, and it doesn't tell you exactly how much, because that's, for instance, that's only one website, right? That's only one supplier, Amazon. So you have to look at your books could be everywhere around the world internationally. You don't really know what's going on until you get that royalty check at the end of that period. So be careful of how much time you spent tracking and record keeping, because that could take up more time than actually your next writing project, which is pretty much more important as a writer to keep going.
You know, Dave makes a really good point there. Don't focus on your ranking numbers or your book sales. Focus on your marketing instead. You could spend way too much time, as you said, and get yourself all worked up over something that isn't all that clear. For instance, ranking numbers only tell you what your book is selling at as compared to other books. For instance, that day your book might have had one sale and other books might have had, oh, 10 sales. And so your book falls at a certain ranking among other books. That doesn't necessarily mean it doesn't necessarily tell you the number of sales. It just tells you your ranking. And so by looking at that, you can go crazy thinking, oh, gosh. But the one good thing about using those rankings is that you've just done an interview, or you know that you've just had an advertisement published in one particular publication, and you're trying to see if that was an effective thing. If you go and look that day and several days after that publication comes out, and you're looking to track to see if that ranking number goes down, and that's effective if you know that you have nothing else going on during that time, and you know that that's the only advertisement that's coming out, for instance, and you haven't done any other publication or marketing for that time period, it can sort of tell you whether that advertisement was an effective choice for you to make or not. Otherwise, ranking numbers really aren't something that we should be concentrating on or even paying too much attention to.
And let's switch gears here for a second, Dave and Lillian, and talk about people who have their books published by a publisher or who are looking to do that. Are there different sorts of skill sets and different types of activities that are involved? And I know that's a big, huge question. Let me see if I can narrow it down a little bit. One of the things that I have heard, anyway, I ask you if it's true, is that a lot of the publishing houses don't do a lot of the promotional work and that they're really looking for authors who can do a lot of that on their own.
That's right. That's almost a big shock that comes to a lot of first-time writers, is that it is pretty much up to them to do their promotion right off the bat. Until you have a name for yourself and your writings, you have to do the initial groundwork and get a lot of it done yourself before the publisher is going to say, okay, we're going to kick in and do some promoting as well. We had one of our publishers that we worked with, there was a certain amount of sales, 500 book sales, I believe, and then they would kick in with a certain marketing plan. But until that point, until you've proven yourself that you can sell the first 500 books on your own and show that you're serious about it, they're not going to really be interested in putting a lot of money and time behind you, because they don't want someone that just wants it all done for them. They want someone that's going to work and work with them and for them and for themselves. So it's a big shock and a big eye-opener for most authors that they have to do a lot of that marketing at first to get your name going.
And, you know, Donna Maria, that's a really good point, too, about having a marketing plan. When you go to a publisher initially with your manuscript, you're going to have a much better reception if you have a partial marketing plan in place, even if it's just a one-pager where you say, basically, this is where I'm going to start, this is where I think I'm going to go from there, these are my resources, these are my connections. If you have that kind of information, that publisher is going to look at you as a serious author, one who recognizes the work that has to be put into them. They don't have time to babysit us and tell us, you know, what to do and how to do it. We have to be aware and be realistic of what this career demands.
So let's say a person is a first-time, soon-to-be author. They're 6 months before they feel like they can get the book out, and they have to decide whether they want to try and see if they can get it published or whether they want to do it themselves. What are some of the things that you would say in conclusion that they should consider? We have a couple of minutes left. Lillian?
Well, that's a big question.
Leave it to me to ask a big, huge question and then say, well, there's only a few minutes left.
Yeah. I think money would be the biggest question in that regard. You know, can they afford to do self-publishing? Self-publishing means you got to pay for your ISBN number out of pocket. You have to pay for the paper and the publication process. All of that goes on with that has to come out of your pocket, the distribution, the signing up with distributors, if there's any fees involved. All of that has to be done by you and you alone. Mm-hmm. If you go with a publisher, they take care of that for you.
Right.
So there are issues in that regard.
Also, you have to consider what you want to come across as, Donna Marie. As a self-publisher, sometimes it seems like you're maybe a small-time, first-time author. If you're with a publisher, you have a little more prestige and a little bit more of a name behind you. So considering that, I would naturally go with a publisher if I could help it at all.
Absolutely. That would be a first choice. You know, your impression is everything when you enter into the market. However, there are a number of self-published authors out there that are bestsellers. their bestsellers right now in the market. And so don't let anyone tell you, no matter what kind of publisher you've chosen, don't let anyone naysay you and say, oh, you know, now you're really set yourself up. No, no. All it means is that you've got to work to stand out in a crowd. That's all it is. That's all it boils down to. It doesn't matter who you've been published by. You can work to stand out in a crowd.
And isn't that what you have to do anyway?
That's right.
No matter what you do. Well, those tips were really great right there at the end. I mean, it does oftentimes come back to the first thing that you suggested, which is money. How much do you have? How much do you want to spend? That's a really, really big issue. Well, I want to, Dave, if you wouldn't mind telling us your website address, or addresses, if you'd like, what are the places where you would want people to come and learn more about you? And also, where can we go, of course, to download and purchase Purple Snowflake Marketing?
Okay, our own personal website is www.sunshinecable.com/tildedrummit. And that tild is a little squiggly sign right below your escape key on the keyboard. And Drummit is spelled D-R-U-M-I-T.
Okay.
We also have a MySpace blog. It's myspace.com/Canadian author. And Lillian's radio show, or our radio show, is on blogtalkradio.com/conscious discussions. And that's now a biweekly show.
Wow. Well, Dave and Lillian Brummett, co-authors of Purple Snowflake Marketing, thank you for joining me today on Indie Business Radio. It was great to have you. Indie Business Radio is produced by Indie Business Media, LLC. Join the discussion at Indie Business Blog. Stream or download all of my radio shows at our website at indiebusinessradio.com. Guests coming up later this month, October 15th, Deborah Belmuth, the managing editor at Storybooks, shares how and how not to pitch your book idea to publishers. That's a great spinoff from this show. And on October 20th, Shannon Kilkenny, author of The Complete Guide to Successful Event Planning, will offer tips on how to plan and host a great holiday product party this season. I hope to see you there and at all of my Indie Business Radio shows coming up. Until then, enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way.